So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show here. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org is my website. We're on APS Radio News, Daily Paul Radio, Anomaly Radio, and et cetera, like that. Follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. All right, good. Our next guest on the show today is the great Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst for 27 years. He even briefed Vice President George H.W. Bush in the 1980s. He was the morning briefing guy. And now he is the co-founder of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. He writes at raymcgovern.com and at consortiumnews.com. And he travels the country giving speeches about peace and about what's really going on and why we need peace so bad. So you might look into hiring him to come and talk to your group, too. Welcome back to the show, Ray. How are you?
Thanks, Scott. Doing okay.
Good, good. Very happy to have you here. This guy, Putin, he's working diligently at reconquering all of Eastern Europe and re-hoisting the red flag over the Kremlin. I know because I read it in the Washington Post, but I can't figure out why he's pulling his troops back from the borders and why he's urging the pro-Russian dissenters in eastern Ukraine to postpone their various referenda over secession and or even just federalism. And I wonder what you think is going on there. How the hell is he supposed to conquer the world by retreating all the time?
Well, I am prompted to make some fun and say it's all a big trick, Scott. It's all a terrible trick. These terrible Russians are very, very clever. But in reality, it has to do with Putin being an adult and Putin having the high cards. He is, in his own measured way, making it clear that whatever intentions that the Victoria Nulands and the John Kerrys had to pry Ukraine away from Russia and make it part of the EU and, worse still, NATO, are going to founder. They're not going to be permitted. High cards? Yeah. Yesterday was really interesting. Yesterday, Putin and his folks made clear that they're going to deliver on this threat about paying normal prices for the gas that they give to that they sell to Ukraine. Moscow announced that after missing its recent payment, Ukraine will have to now pay for national delivery gas deliveries in advance. Okay, now that's a big high card. That's a very big high card.
Well, and he's got to be laughing his ass off because that means the American people have to pay it.
That's right. You and I, for your taxpayer dollars at work here. It's really quite remarkable because I guess the IMF has already given them $2 billion. So, you know, it's really what we have here is Russia supplies 30% of West Europeans' gas needs, and about half of those go to the Ukraine. Now, the last two times that Russia cut off this gas, the Ukrainians siphoned off some of the stuff that was destined for Western Europe. So, you know, it's one of these things where, as I view it, Putin can sit back and say, all right, well, you rich bankers from the IMF and Wall Street, you want to pay for the gas. That's okay, but you ain't getting no more gas until we get advance payments. This is big. So that's part of it. Now, the other part of it is that, you know, Putin talked with Angela Merkel, the German chancellor, and you know they appeared for some circular talks between the East Ukrainians and the government, get things going in a different way. Roundtable meeting is what they call it. And that's quite remarkable that Merkel and Putin would agree on that. And yet the Quisling government in Kiev is not about to do that. As a matter of fact, it announced yesterday that it's going to pursue this armed campaign against, you got it, terrorists out there in eastern Ukraine with no let-up. So the thing seems to be spinning out of control, but the good news is that Lavrov is still talking with Kerry as recently as 2 days ago by phone. They're both out of the countries. But I think that as things progress, the referendums, they'll probably take place tomorrow, but I don't think they really, or Sunday, I don't think they're going to be worth much. Most of the Ukrainians, even in the East, don't favor separation from Kiev. What they favor is separation from the Quisling Kiev government that we put in on the 22nd of February. That much is understandable. Now, one of the things that's kind of new, at least it is to me, I hunted down a WikiLeaks cable, okay? A cable out of Moscow. I know how they look. I used to serve there. And this is as authentic as can be. It's confidential, but it's out there in WikiLeaks. And it's a cable from the ambassador in Moscow, our ambassador, William Burns. And the date is 1 February 2008, and he's saying, you know, Foreign Minister Lavrov, who, as you know, is still around, he has reiterated strong opposition to Ukraine opting for NATO. They see it as a potential military threat, and it's clearly, quote, an emotional and neuralgic, end quote, issue for Russia.
Hang on, I got to Google neuralgic.
Anyhow, Lavrov is giving an end-of-the-year review, and he's saying, look, if you guys think that you can get Ukraine into NATO on false pretenses that it's not a threat to us, well, that just ain't the way we look at this. This is, he says, a raw nerve in Russia. Mm. And
yeah, there you go, neuralgia.
There you go.
The raw nerve pain, that's what it says.
Is that what it is? Okay. So what happens is here, Bill Burns finishes his cable with a comment. Russia, this confidential comment, by the way, classified confidential. Russia's opposition to NATO membership for Ukraine is both emotional and based on perceived strategic concerns about the impact of Russia's interests in the region. Okay, now, what does that mean? Well, that's the 1st of February 2008. On the 3rd of April 2008.
Is that a warning? Is that what he's saying? Is that we're pushing it too far here?
Of course it is. Yeah, he's saying this. Look, we don't, even if we believed that you don't intend us any harm, he says we have to look at the realities. It's not the intentions, it's the capabilities.
Or he's just telling them to be careful. He's not telling them to stop. He's just saying we better tread carefully here because they take this very seriously.
Well, he's telling us, in effect, that it's not going to happen. He's saying, look, we're strongly opposed to this, and we regard it as a potential military threat.
No, I'm sorry, too many he's here. I meant Burns, the State Department weenie writing home.
Yeah, but, you know, he was pretty good as ambassador to Moscow. He didn't have any influence, but he knew what the score was.
Well, he's the guy who worked out this Iranian nuclear deal in Oman.
Well, he almost did, yeah, until he was undercut by the Israelis. Anyhow, he finished up by saying, look, this is not only, an emotional thing. There's a perception of strategic concern because Russia's interests in the region won't permit a U.S. NATO ally right under its soft underbelly. The reason I mention this is that's exactly 2 months before the heads of state in NATO met in Bucharest. And what did they decide? I shall read from paragraph 23 of their summit declaration, dated 3 April 2008. 2 months after the cable I just read. Quote, NATO welcomes Ukraine's and Georgia's Euro-Atlantic aspirations for membership in NATO we agree today that these countries will become members of NATO, period, end quote. So we agree today that the Ukraine and Georgia would become members of NATO. Well, that's 2 months after they were warned by the Russians, look, it's not going to happen. This is a real strategic threat to us. No matter how many nice words you use, you're not going to convince us. Now, that's what? That's 6 years ago. Right now, it's coming back to roost. And now, what Bill Burns and the others are all saying is, well, you know, back in 2008, it looked like we could push the Russians around. Ain't no longer possible to do that. We better come to reality here and realize that the Russians are terrifically distrustful of our investing $5 billion in Ukraine's aspirations for association with the West. In other words, we see what's going on. We have the high cards here. It's not going to happen. We're not going to invade Ukraine. We could just sit back and fiddle with the gas deliveries and all that kind of thing. You ought to stop making fools of yourselves. And that's what Putin is saying. And Angela Merkel, I dare say, has a very different perspective from President Obama because they have huge economic stakes, not only because of the gas from Russia, but because of all the bilateral trade agreements and other agreements they have with Russia since 2008.
All the uncertainty that is bad for markets all around, for sure. All right, I'm sorry, we got to take this break. We're talking with Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, now peacenik, writes at consortiumnews.com. When we get back, I'm going to ask him about his colleague Robert Perry's piece today, where he says that Obama and Putin have been talking. They're going over John Kerry's head and getting this thing worked out. Hang tight. We'll be right back after this. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, you guys, no KPFK show this Sunday, because it's fundraising time for them over there, and it's just easier, I guess, if they spend that time begging. Hey, that's a hell of a great project there, KPFK, Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. So I don't mind giving up 3 weeks out of every quarter worth of shows, because, hey, they let me be on the most powerful FM signal west of the Mississippi River the rest of the time, so I'll take it. Good deal. Anti-war radio, Sunday mornings on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Back in a couple of weeks. Okay, good. Okay, we're talking with Ray McGovern. And Ray McGovern, he's a former CIA analyst, and he's now a peacenik and a veteran intelligence professional for Sanity. And they recently wrote a memo directly to the President of the United States saying, hey, here's how you need to start shaping up and flying right and stop screwing this thing up here. And now Robert Perry has written this article, yesterday's, the byline on it, Putin's subtle message to Obama. And he says in here, and I'm sorry, Ray, I didn't. I'll paraphrase it. He's saying Obama is talking to Putin, and that he says he has sources in D.C. who are telling him this. Do you know about that? Can you confirm that? Does that sound right to you? Anything along those lines?
I can confirm it by the logic of the situation, by what's been going on, and by my implicit trust in Bob Perry, who's one of the few investigative reporters around that's really worth his salt these days. What's really interesting here from a sort of ground perspective, Scott, is that the memo that we veteran intelligence professionals for Sanity put out on the 4th of May got us all over the Russian press. I myself was interviewed either by Skype or in studio by six major Russian TV channels, and some of my colleagues had cumulatively as many appearances. Now, that contrasts with the play that this memo got in the mainstream U.S. press, which is nothing, unless you count one paragraph in a Huffington Post article. So, whether or not our message got to the president, and they usually do through normal channels, It's certainly
we published it at antiwar.com/blog, so you know he's reading that.
Right, you know that. But as my friends who worked in the old Foreign Broadcast Information Service, they translate these Russian TV programs and articles. I was featured on page one of the Moscow Evening News, interview that I gave. So it all gets back to the White House. Now, whether he's informed by our advice or not, he seems to be following it, given what Bob Perry has been hearing from his own sources, and the fact that things are beginning to happen. When I heard that Putin told them to knock off the referendum and that he had some kind words for the election coming up on the 25th, I was surprised. I was happily surprised, but these were clearly conciliatory gestures. When I heard that Putin and Angela Merkel got together and said, you know, let's have a round table here. We need to tamp down this crisis. I was also surprised because Angela Merkel had just talked with our president. So things are Obama, I think, is trying to get things on track so he can avoid further embarrassment. He's looking a little bit like, you know, like the clown that Kerry is, but thankfully, he has precedent. He has precedent back in September when Vladimir Putin pulled Obama's chestnuts out of the fire on Syria. Obama agreed not to make war on Syria, a war that Secretary Kerry said would be a, quote, unbelievably small war, end quote. And we know nothing like that was planned. It was shock and awe. It was B-52s. It was stealth bombers. It was the whole nine yards, okay? Mm-hmm. Anyhow, Obama reversed Kerry on the 31st of August. And in return, the apparent casus belli here, the chemical weapons in Syria's arsenal, behind the scenes, Putin and Secretary or Foreign Minister Lavrov were able to work with the Syrians, and what Putin told Obama was, look, this is going to be all right. We have this worked out. Just don't tell Kerry about it until we get it near completion. And that's what happened. Kerry was mousetrapped into thinking that it was impossible. He said so on the 9th of September, and on the afternoon of that same day, Lavrov got up, but he said, we think the Syrians will agree with this. And 2 hours later, the Syrian foreign minister got up and said, yep, we're all set to destroy all our chemical weapons. Now, what's the point of my saying all that? Well, that deprived the neocons of their war. They wanted this war on Syria. Why did they want the war on Syria? Because the government was beginning to win, and the people that are the rebels and all those kinds of people were beginning to lose. And what the Israelis and others felt, the other neocons, was you get the U.S. in, and that ensures to keep the pot boiling forever. At about this time, Judy Ruderin, a New York Times reporter in Jerusalem, asked several senior Israeli officials, what's your preferred outcome of Syria? And all of them said, oh, that's easy. No outcome. And she said, I beg your pardon? And there's no outcome. As long as the Shia and Sunni are killing each other off, they're not going to turn their weapons on us. This is, you know, we just keep the pot boiling.
Right. Now, hey, Ray, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have to just to confirm you because I was just talking with the good people on the show earlier today about this article in McClatchy Newspapers where they're talking about it's Mitchell Prothero saying, yes, they're going to try again to build up this so-called moderate opposition force. And the quote from the anonymous official at the end is, because the objective of the policy is not to assure an opposition military victory. It's just to make sure an opposition exists. In other words, what you just said. Keep the war going as long as possible. Yeah. While they cry crocodile tears for all the dead kids and all of the refugees and all of the crisis in the society, that's the U.S. government's plan.
Yeah, well, that's the Israeli plan, and the U.S. government is tied like a, you know, Siamese twin to it. I just have to say how unconscionable I find that. You know, that's just as bad as Madeleine Albright saying that the death of 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of 500,000, that was worth it under the sanctions. Worth it. These people have no experience of war. They have no experience of innocent suffering. And they just are deranged and diverted from any sense of proportionality here. To keep that Syrian thing boiling in a cauldron is irresponsible. We could get together with the Russians and others and put an end to it, but the interests there are to keep it going.
Well, and then back to Ukraine, because that's the problem here, too, is, of course, the right sector would prefer civil war because that's in their interest as their own little Nazi group. It's obviously not in the interests of the citizens, the people of Ukraine in general, but certainly there are interest groups who would benefit from that, and it seems like that's the point of burning a bunch of people alive and that kind of thing is to provoke a reaction. That's what terrorism's about, is provoking a reaction. So, you know, whether or not, you know, America and or Russia are willing to intervene directly in Ukraine to this or that degree, although they say CIA and FBI and others are there, probably some Russian intelligence are there, but do you think that they would even be able to stop a civil war at the point we're at now, or how bad is this looking to you? One thing we talked about before, Ray, and I'm sorry, I'll be quiet because we're almost out of time, but one thing we talked about before was you're not quite as worried as you might be because the new coup junta in Kiev is so weak, and its military force and even its neo-Nazi brown shirt force is so weak that they can't really exercise state power over the East. They can't take back those buildings and hold them and that kind of thing. And so in that sense, they don't really have the ability to escalate it to the kind of nightmare proportions that we might, you know, worry about. But, I mean, where are we now? And you have about a minute or so to answer.
Well, I think I take some solace in the fact that a lot of this has been artificially stoked, okay? Most Ukrainians, including East Ukrainians, want to see a unified country. All they don't want to see is a junta, is a putsch, which happened in Kiev. What they want to see is a decent respect given to their own regional interests. And I think that since all the things you just mentioned, and particularly the government is so weak, once there's an election, once they have to cope with the price of natural gas and paying their bills, and once all these things kind of settle down, which I think they will eventually, then I think the adults can take over and make sure that the Yasinyuks of this world are gone and that the neo-Nazis and the fascists and all those people are put in their place. This is possible. It just takes a little statesmanship. I like what I hear Bob Perry saying about Obama and Putin doing this behind the scenes.
There could be worse presidents, I have to admit. Although, Perry lets him totally off the hook for the whole crisis, which I can't abide that either. But anyway, we're out of time. I'm sorry. Thanks so much for your time, Ray. You're great. Ray McGovern, everybody. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement. Featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more, The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.